NFL. It's the Football League podcast that walked away with the Oscar for least consistently scheduled pod. Today, to paraphrase Dame Vera Lynn, there'll be bluebirds trampling over promotion dreams of Ipswich. Elsewhere, happy Watford Club Statement Day to all those who celebrate. And there's a way day joy for baggies, imps, potters and more. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Do not adjust your calendars. It is Monday and we're back with you. We're a bit all over the place at the moment, gang, I'm afraid. But to be honest, we're three freelancers. We have to spin a lot of plates to keep things going. So sometimes you're going to get us on a Monday. Sometimes you're going to get us on a Wednesday. Whenever you get us, you're going to have a good hour or so of red hot EFL chat. It's me, Matt, and I'm joined by my two podcasting pals. Hello, Adrian Clark.
Good morning. Yeah, it's bold intro, wasn't it? Bold with the singing.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to reach a younger audience, so I thought I'd reference a bit of Vera Lynn, which should hook them in. Sam Parkin, you're a big Dame Vera guy?
I was just thinking you're on very highbrow for this time in the morning and for probably the platform that we're trying to attract new listeners for.
I wouldn't say she's my favourite wartime singer, but she's in the top one. Before we get going today, let me give you a reminder of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers at sign-up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, we'll kick off with an opening gambit. And as it is Oscar season, I thought we'd do the Oscar for the best, something from the weekend, any category that the chaps would care to make up. Adrian, what you got for me?
The best epic fail, I think, for me has to be Alfie May. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen it, boys?
Just sensational.
It's incredible. I mean, I don't know whether this is just something that Charlton do when they win, Sam, or not in terms of the...
Was it the tunnel jump thing?
Yeah. The tunnel thing after the game. Is it after a victory, someone comes out and does it? Well, anyway, Alfie May comes out. Everyone stayed behind to witness the sort of joyous celebration. And as he jumps, he basically slips like he's on ice and smashes back first onto the deck. It was pretty embarrassing. Great striker. Lovely goal record at League One, but... Yeah, this was an epic balls up, really, from Alfie May. Egg on face.
Very funny, though, because he didn't get injured. But I can just imagine what Nathan Jones would have thought of the tunnel jump tradition if it meant he'd been without him until, I don't know, May. Sam, how about you? What are you awarding? Who's getting it?
I'm going for the best and worst combined managerial celebrations at full time. We didn't have Steve Evans, unfortunately, this weekend because of the 0-0. We did have Pete Wilde, although I've not feasted my eyes across his left-handed fist pumps, which, you know, I enjoy. But Steve Cottrell, Forest Green Rovers. And because it's an Oscar, I mean, this was everything you'd want from a pantomime and more. He's doing the raise the decibel signals with his hands. He's cupping his ear to his supporters behind the goal to get them up, get them enthused for what was to come. And then he's gone for the continental straight arms up for the three, you know, like the Danny Roll, the thing that you see in the Bundesliga against a backdrop of 20,000 supporters. But he's done it at the Forest Green Rovers stadium, which I'm sure wasn't as intimidating as some of those venues on Saturday, but a great win. And he's turning it around. And I would tell everyone to go and have a look at Steve Cottrell basking in the glory of a victory.
I'll be doing that as soon as we finished here. Get on, Steve Cottrell. Hey, seems like a decent bloke, doesn't he? And he's got them to what, within a couple of points of safety in League Two. I'm going to give the Oscar for flukiest goal to Stoke's Luke McNally. Absolutely no idea, had he. Defender's clearance, smacked straight into him, in it goes. Lovely bit of business, right in front of the away fans. Yep, that's my goal. Totally meant that. Really enjoyable stuff. All right, next today, we're going to be talking Watford in the company of a Hornets expert. Well, I'm very pleased to say that we're joined by Mike Parkin of the excellent and award-winning Watford podcast From the Rookery End to discuss the Hornets' decision to ditch Valerian Ismail following their 2-1 home defeat to Coventry at the weekend. Mike, people like to score cheap points by riffing on Watford's hire and fire and policy. We certainly aren't above that. But in this case, is it kind of difficult to argue with the decision?
Very difficult to argue with it, yes, Mike. I mean, the results haven't been great, but that the performances have been incredibly alarming as well. Certainly since the new year, Valerian Ismail did a lot of good at Watford initially. He managed to knit together a pretty threadbare squad, really. It's probably the thinnest squad in terms of talent since the Pozzos took over, I think. And he managed to instill a bit of discipline, something that's been missing, I think, at Vicarage Road for a couple of years. So he did steady the ship to a degree. But since, I mean, he even got us to within a sniff of the playoffs at one point. There was questions around Vicarage Road whether we could be surprise contenders at the top end of the table. But since the turn of the year, the performance has been absolutely woeful. And to be perfectly frank, even knowing the way that Gino Pozzo operates, it's been a surprise that he's lasted this long. I think that the last couple of weeks have been particularly disappointing for us as Watford supporters.
Fair to say, though, that it's not as superficial as this just being a first-team squad issue, right? It goes a bit deeper than that.
Yeah, I think there are massive issues at the football club. I think ever since Watford got promoted back at the first time of asking into the Premier League, it became apparent that the investment wasn't at the same level as it has been into the football club. That team that we went back up with into the Premier League wasn't really equipped to give it a good go in the top flight and came back straight back down. We managed to hold on to João Pedro and Ismaïla Sarr last year in the Championship, but didn't really add to the side. And then once again this year, the incomings have been very, very thin. And so it's just been a sort of ever diminishing quality in the squad because the investment hasn't been there. I mentioned earlier that Valerian Ismail was able to turn around to a degree some of the cracks that had appeared in terms of discipline and the players looking like they wanted to be there, which should be a given really for a football club. So he did, but ultimately, as you allude to there, Matt, he's papering over the cracks, really.
Mike, what happened in January? Because I expected Watford to really strengthen. Obviously, as you just referenced, you were sort of within reach of the playoffs. But it felt like you got rid of, who'd you get rid of? Healy, Imran Loser went, didn't he? And then only one player came in, and Emmanuel Dennis. I mean, he hasn't looked fit, has he? So, like, what was the story in January?
Well, I think there's two sides to it. I think that the commonly held belief is that from a financial point of view, Watford are right up against it. They're losing a lot of money on a weekly basis, as most clubs that get relegated out of the Premier League end up in that situation. So I think that was the commonly held belief, that they were just effectively skint. You mentioned Emmanuel Dennis coming back in. Very Gino Pozzo, that, to bring in someone sort of shiny and sparkly. He can do all the social media about it. He shone, didn't he, last time he was at Watford. But since he left, he struggled at Nottingham Forest. He struggled again in Turkey. And like you say, Adrian, since he came back, he hasn't looked fit. He doesn't really look fit now, let alone when he first joined in January. But there was an interesting piece in the local paper, the Watford Observer, over the weekend, which suggested that Valerian Ismail had gone to the hierarchy with a list of targets in key positions. I think there were three key positions he wanted to strengthen. One of them was striker. Gave them some quite clear names. The hierarchy came back and said, we're unable to get these guys, but we've got others who fit the profile. We're going to try and bring those in. And apparently Valerian Ismail was very, very firm that it was the list he gave them or nothing. So that hinted a bit of friction between the owner and the head coach at that stage, and might be another little strand as to why the January transfer window was so quiet. But like you say, Adrian, it was two out. And one in, and the one that came in was barely fit, and he struggled. He's looked half the player we had back a couple of years ago.
Mike, I think we all had a clear idea of what Valerian Ismail's team had looked like previously. Seemed to change quite dramatically at Watford. What did it look like? And with the players that are at the club now for Tom Cleverley, what would you like the performances and the style to be moving forward for the remainder?
Well, the fact that I'm awake to talk to you guys today is a surprise, having watched so much Watford over the last couple of months. It's been dismal, really, Sam. I mean, to start off, what he tried to do was play out from the back and was trying to play a very intricate style of football. That they ditched that when he quickly realised that he didn't really have the squad to do it. Has maintained that sort of desire to possession first has been the phrase, really, that you'd attach to Valeri and Ismail's style of play. Not a bit of the up and at and sort of style that we perhaps might have expected from him. It's been very, very intricate, very slow, very sort of just holding onto the ball has seemed to be the key message. And that has resulted in them in the final third being just desperately poor. They look devoid of ideas. They look unable to sort of manufacture chances against even the most struggling of sides. We've had a period of games against teams at the bottom. And I'm not over-exaggerating. Say I probably could have been in goal for the opposition and the result would have been the same. In that final third, Watford have looked dire. Now, there is the caveat there. Striking options are minimal. I've never known a Watford side with so few striking options. Vakun Bio is fine, but limited. Mieta Rajovic has come in and scored goals, but again, is limited. Can't really hold the ball up particularly well for a big man. And we've already spoken about Emmanuel Dennis, who isn't fit. So in Valerian Ismail's defence, his striking options have been next to nothing. And I think what he's expected them to do is the more creative players like potentially Yasser Espria and Mateus Martins to try and work around that and to unlock defences using their innate talent. But they just haven't been able to do it, Sam. And as a result, yes, they've had good possession. Yes, they're stringing passes together. But in terms of questions they're asking the opposition defence, there's been nothing. It's been quite incredible to watch. It's almost been like performance art. It's been so bad.
Presumably, Tom Cleverley's a stopgap option. It's a massive first game for him, right? Away at Birmingham next weekend.
Ooh, huge, because Watford are in the relegation battle, I think. If you look at the run-in, certainly after the game at St Andrews at the weekend, they've got to play mostly teams in the upper echelons of the division. As I mentioned earlier, have been struggling against teams at the bottom. So, yeah, I think the wording around the announcement is that Tom Cleverley is an interim head coach. We'll wait and see. One of the strands that I've been talking about through this is finances. So how keen will they be to bring in another full-time manager at this stage of the season? Who would want it? Are they going to have to throw extra money at someone to come in at this time of the season? Loads and loads of questions swirling around. I think, as I've alluded to, us as supporters have been pretty disappointed with the way things have panned out. And one thing we know we're going to get from Tom Cleverley is someone who knows the club, someone who understands the ethos, understands what we as supporters want, and perhaps more importantly, knows the players that are there and their capabilities, which I think is something that Valerian Ismail was unable to get his head around. I think Tom Cleverley will hopefully be able to tap into that. But yeah, we're all waiting to see, Matt, what the next step is. But yeah, it couldn't be a tougher game. But St Andrews will be absolutely bouncing on Saturday. But that said, Tom Cleverley has been involved in some proper football over the years, hasn't he? Of course, played at Old Trafford, played under Alex Ferguson, played for England. He's a proper footballer with proper experience, and he obviously wants to be in the frame to be a coach. Because quite frankly, otherwise he'd have left Watford a long time ago. Yeah, interesting. But I think he'll have the backing of the supporters, which is half the battle.
Yeah. Does the owner have the backing of the supporters? Because it strikes me a feeling of helplessness, really. He owns your club. And it basically has killed the connection between the fans and the team because of the constant evolving door. You can't relate to anyone. You can't get to know any players or get to know any managers. Watford is just... no one knows what Watford are anymore under this ownership. Would you rather have less money but be able to have that connection again and a little bit of stability?
Well, I think we've got the less money bit already, Adrian. We don't need to worry about that. But you're absolutely right. The disconnect between Watford supporters and the club does feel big at the moment. And I think that it just feels like the owner wants out. I think the level of investment and just all the noise. He doesn't really speak to Watford fans. You never really hear him in the media. If you do a quick search for him after this, you're not going to find many quotes from him about Watford Football Club and his plans. So he's very much operates in the shadows, and there's never really been a connection between the supporters and him. You do have to view it in a broader, wider context. What he has delivered for Watford was four and a bit decent years in the Premier League, and FA Cup final. We flirted with Europe in that season as well. And for a club like Watford, who are in the grand scheme of things, relatively small in terms of population and supporter base. He did deliver that, but at what cost, which I think is what you're getting at, Adrian. And yeah, I think we would rather, it's difficult to say, because, you know, in that time we've beaten Arsenal, United, Tottenham, and we had all those fun times. And you can't just say we'd give all that away, because we loved it at the time. Turning up at Vicarage Road and seeing us turn over those sides was tremendous. And football's all about moments, as we all know, and he has delivered plenty of those. But there is a massive disconnect at the moment. And I think the majority of Watford supporters, not all, but would accept that a time has come for a change at the top. That said, Watford are a club with a decent amount of debt, decent high levels of ongoing costs. So quite frankly, who's going to want to come in, take all that on? That's the big question. So yes, to answer your question, there is a disconnect and there is a huge desire for a change at the top. How likely that is and how possible it is open to interpretation.
Well, look, Mike, we really appreciate you sparing some time for us today. Let people know how they can find The Rookery End on socials and wherever they get their pods.
Yeah, so we're Watford Podcast on socials. And if you just search for From The Rookery End, wherever you get your podcast, you'll find us. And look forward to coming on in 2 or 3 weeks' time when we sack the next manager.
Yes, well, I was going to say, you know, enjoy the rest of the season and the great battle for survival under Neil Warnock.
Oh, God, Matt, thanks very much. It's only 11 o'clock and you've ruined my week already.
Cheers, Mike. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, guys.
Big thanks to Mike. Follow him on Twitter, now known as X, at Rookery Mike. And as he says, From The Rookery End is available at Watford Podcast. We are going to review the weekend next. And we have to start with an incredible end to the early kickoff in South Wales on Saturday. Cardiff scoring twice in stoppage time to turn a 1-0 deficit into a 2-1 win and put a big puncture in Ipswich's tractor bound for the Premier League. Sam, we all assumed that it was an away win once Kiefer Moore had scored relatively late on, actually, I presume.
Yeah, and what a brilliant goal. Loved it. The old left foot, that was my little signature when I was getting into the game, taking it onto my left side, which everyone presumed was my weaker foot, smashing it across the goalkeeper to the bottom right. Didn't really think he maybe had that in his armoury, so no, it was a lovely goal. I was going to give my Oscar, actually, to the Cardiff City supporters behind that goal for the celebrations. There was something beautiful about the rapturous way they celebrated both goals. But I couldn't decide between them and Leeds, because that was pretty impressive at Hillsborough as well from them.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd go for Steve Cotchell in any case. But I was watching the highlights last night and I even stopped my partner in her tracks as she was making her way to bed and just went, just watch the Cardiff fans here. It's sensational. It was so good. But obviously, you know, circumstantially, that you're going to get that from a set of any supporters really when you've scored so late in added on time. But I thought you could maybe pick holes in Ipswich's game management for one of the first times this season. But I think it's just the luck of the draw, really. This is going to happen every now and again. He'd used all his changes. They do go and attack games, Ipswich, we know, even if they're leading late in the games. But I think probably having more off the pitch when they had to defend these deliveries and the set pieces and Twanzabi was on the bench, didn't get on. The kind of profile of the players that they had on there to defend was probably not ideal.
But he'd just taken off Kiefer Moore.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, I know that Kiefer Moore probably was blowing, but if you're expecting the avalanche, you know, of balls coming into your box, he's the last one you should be taking off, really. I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. But it's probably product of what's gone before, and also that Alhamadi deserves his minutes, doesn't he? And has been affecting it. So you're always juggling it as a manager. But yeah, I think that's what some of the Ipswich fans will be saying today. But I think you've got a credit card, if haven't you? There's been a huge upturn there. I think we spoke pre-January about the uncertainty about the manager. He came out, didn't he? And kind of had a go at the board. And then he was backed in January, and now you can see the improvement. The likes of Turnbull, I think Nat Phillips, Wilson Esbrand, been exceptional the last few games. Got more options in attack as well, and you could see that depth because all the substitutes had an effect at the weekend. I think Colwell was involved in one of the goals, Gigi as well. I know Dowder hasn't played any football, I don't think, since August, since the very early part of the season. So they're improving, got an outside chance, and I think, yeah, Ipswich have been so good on the road, winning tight games, that you know, this is always liable to happen, and it's just how they respond now after what's been a sensational run for them.
K-Mac needing to pick the lads off the floor for the home game of Sheffield Wednesday next then. Cardiff, Clarkie, four wins on the spin. Just looking at their upcoming fixtures, I mean, basically everybody that they play, apart from Rotherham on the last day, has got something to play for. They've got the big one against Swansea next weekend. But if you're in their position 5 points off the playoffs, can you make an argument to say, actually, you want to be playing Coventry and Hull and Southampton and teams that you can take points off and thereby reel in, even though they're theoretically more difficult games?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, it's the perfect run-in, I would say, for Cardiff City. And they couldn't be coming into it in better form. I didn't see this coming because I saw them a couple of times in the flesh. And on both occasions at home, they were comprehensively outplayed and a little bit lifeless, really. They didn't have much about them in terms of energy. But these new faces have clearly begun to make an impact. And yeah, it was. I think the two central midfielders deserve a bit of credit here as well. Obviously, spent most of the game chasing the ball. But Wintour and Siopsis, they sort of just stuck at it. And I think they just made life difficult. And they were sort of proper rats in the middle of the engine room just to sort of make it less of the type of match Ipswich would want it to be. You know, denying quality service into those brilliant forwards that Ipswich have got. I think they did a terrific job. Out of possession, and then at the end they just chance their arm and pump the ball into the box. And look, I've been saying it all season about Ipswich's centre backs. I think they should have upgraded in January. I think they should have got someone with a little bit more experience, maybe have been involved in the top end of the Championship, because they do make mistakes, you know. And we saw, I think, Burgess fail to clear the ball on this occasion and they score from it. And yeah, look, they've had good seasons. You can't say they haven't, but I just think they need more clean sheets, Ipswich. You know, they're having to score twos and threes and fours to win games, aren't they? It's amazing that they're still in the race for top two, considering the goals they concede. So yeah, it came back to bite them here. But I'm with Sam. They shouldn't beat themselves up too much. It's just
they would love a 1-0 at Portman Road, wouldn't they? Above anything, and that would just change the dynamic. And I think just the supporters' mindset would be like, well, maybe we can actually stay the pace, which it's going to require, isn't it? The way Leeds and Leicester are going to go.
The playoffs as well. If they're in the playoffs, I mean, those games are going to be incredible involving Ipswich, aren't they? Because they're not involved in anything other than dramatic matches. So kind of from a neutral's perspective, we want them in it because you know the games will be good. You know they'll be wild. Blow for them though, losing this one to Cardiff.
Cardiff got all 3 points, but Leeds might consider themselves the big winners from that one. Elsewhere, friends are supposed to help you out when you're struggling, so it's heartening to see Ryan Lowe give his old pal Stephen Schumacher a hand with a much-needed 3 points. Stoke winning 2-1 at Preston to move out of the Championship relegation zone. Adrian, he's been under pressure, hasn't he? But there has been improvement from them lately. They were unlucky at Leeds. They've beaten Borough, and now this is a big win for them too.
Definitely. I think the Leeds game was a real turning point for them, even though they got beat there. So, yeah, I think that they've got the belief back. It was really interesting that he went back to three at the back for the game. Basically, he knows Ryan Lowe inside out, doesn't he? I think they're still good buddies, aren't they? And he'd have known exactly the tactics that Preston were going to play, probably seen how effective the two strikers with the one in behind have been in recent weeks, and just sort of kind of matched it up a little bit with the three centre-backs. I think Lyndon Gooch was really important and has been of late. It's quite bold to play Lyndon Gooch, I think, at full-back. But he does get forward and contribute. And I think in this game, he defended well and made a great run and cross for the first goal. That was tremendous. There's a big save as well from the keeper, Everson. When it was 1-1, I think it was Ben Whiteman that ran through and he made a top save. And then you think that's a massive moment. And then they get that fluky winner, don't they, Stoke? So, fair play to them. I think it was a good tactical performance. He's getting a little bit of a tune out of the players now. A little bit disappointed to hear that Stoke fans were sort of cheering when Tyrese Campbell came off, because he was the surprise selection at the start of the game. I think he did all right, but it was a bit of a scrappy game. Not a lot on offer for the forward players, but when Tyrese Campbell's sort of number came up, there were a lot of cheers from the Stoke end. And I think, you know, this is a kid that came through and did a really good job. You know, a couple of years ago, he's been beset by injuries. I want a bit more support, really, for players like that. But they've obviously turned against him. So that was disappointing. But yeah, terrific win. And it gives them a little bit of hope, doesn't it, that they can scramble their way to safety.
Preston kicking themselves a bit Sam here, 5 points off the playoffs. This game, then they've got Plymouth, Rotherham, Birmingham, Watford, Huddersfield. So points available, but not the way to start a run against a bunch of struggling sides.
Yeah, they'll still have hope. I think it's an outside chance is my honest feeling here, having seen them a few times in the flesh. But there's definitely been an upturn. I think just the ability to get everyone fit at the same time, that front two, I think that Clarkie just spoke of, has been really prudent in the last few weeks. I think Keane's performances in particular have been very good. Defensively, we know that they've been capable, but it's not been consistent enough this season. So they've kind of got it back at both ends of the pitch in recent times. And this was incredibly subdued. Just four attempts, I think. Didn't have one on target just prior to them getting the Osmajic goal. So, yeah, it was a really well-done job by Stephen Schumacher to go with that extra physicality to just make it a scrap to match them up. Josh Laurent playing further forward shows what the new management team think of him and his importance. But, yeah, I think after that Coventry performance for Preston a few weeks ago, where they won, was it 3-0, blew them out of the water in the first half. There was that kind of optimism that this run could fire them into the playoffs. And it's a little bit of a reality check and probably realistic that I think it's going to be too tough for us for them to get in the playoffs.
It's too limited in terms of the types of players they got personally. And even in this game, when it wasn't really working, what could he do, Ryan Lowe, with the personnel that he's got? I mean, I suppose he could have changed the system and mixed things up a bit. But yeah, I think they're doing as well as they can, actually, Preston.
Well, there was another significant result at the bottom and the top, for that matter, on Sunday in Yorkshire, where West Brom came from behind to hammer Huddersfield 4-1. We'll get Adrian's take on Huddersfield shortly. But Sam, here's a question I've got for you. The Throstles of Albion absolutely nestled in the playoffs, 5 clear of 7, 16 off second. So we've had them nailed on for a while. My question, though, how good is Celtic's team if Mikey Johnston can't get in it?
Not my specialist subject anymore, mate. I haven't got the time to cover Scottish football at the moment. But yeah, I mean, he's brilliantly exciting. He's been incredibly clinical, hasn't he? I think it's 6 goals with his 11 shots or whatever that keeps flashing up. He's taking goals brilliantly. I obviously saw him live at QPR where he scored an absolute peach. He's been bending them top right-hand corner, hasn't he? Coming in off the left-hand side, and he whipped that one in the near post the other day against Rangers. And I mean, this was a bizarre game. I caught the majority of it. The first half, they were so off it, West Brom. And I'd go as far to say as they haven't played well in the last 4 games. I think they've played well in 2 halves of football. The first half against Coventry at the Hawthorns a few Fridays ago, and then the second half here. And they've taken 8 points from those games. So I don't know if this is luck or by judgment. I think it can happen in games. What we witnessed on Saturday lunchtime, I think there's the intensity that Huddersfield played with is going to drop off in the second half. That's inevitable. There's a bit of fatigue there. There's the tension, I think, the subconscious kind of tension, the psychology of what's going on in the game. No two halves are the same. And there's the impact that an opposition manager can probably have as well. And I've seen a lot of supporters just saying, well, they pressed the life out of us in the first half. And in the second half, we just went a little bit longer and went over Huddersfield's press. That maybe probably plays into it to a degree. And I had a little look and there was certainly a hell of a lot less passes in the defensive third from West Brom. But I think that the psychology and the tension also plays a big part in it. So I didn't see it coming. They absolutely battered Huddersfield in that second half. 3 touches in the box in the first period, not a shot. West Brom, 19 touches in the second half, and obviously 4 goals as well to win out comfortably. But yeah, Johnson to come in and have this impact, you'd probably say at the moment he's a bit of an upgrade on Sarmiento, although Sarmiento has done not bad at Ipswich when he's had opportunities.
A great goal from Yukoshlu here as well. Bit of a naughty question from me, Adrian, but Huddersfield are in the relegation zone. Would things have been any worse if they'd stuck with Neil Warnock?
Naughty.
Should ask the Aberdeen punters on that one.
Well, I think they'd be worse if they'd stuck with Darren Moore. I'll go as far as to say that. I think that Warnock, I think, would have probably got more points for them. I genuinely do. Over the course of this season, I think they'd probably have a few more points. But they might have a few less if they'd have stuck with more. I think the signs are pretty positive under Brighton Reiter, really. I mean, the players they are responding to him, aren't they? And the kind of man-to-man approach, worked for that 45, as Sam was saying, caused them a load of problems, kept winning the ball back in good areas. It's just a slight quality issue, isn't it? It's the squad. Look at the names, look at the CVs, look at the places that their players have played before Huddersfield Town. And this is, for most of the players, this is the highest level they've ever played at. And I think that is a bit of an issue for them. You know, the quality is not quite the same as a lot of the opponents they're coming up against. And we saw that in the second half. Throughout the season, I just had a look at the stats, and Huddersfield are, if games ended at half time, Huddersfield would be 12th, but they don't. And you know, for because they tail off in the second half, and they haven't got the depth. You know, it's not just about the style of play, it's about the depth on the bench. They haven't got players there that you can turn to and know that they're going to be just as good, if not better. And
Clarkie, that's where game management comes into it as well. You know, being able to control possession at times in games rather than just being so, you know, on the front foot, yes, and on the press and aggressive from the, because no two halves of football are ever like that. You cannot maintain it.
No, completely. I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah, I think so. And these players are still capable of putting their foot on the ball, aren't they? Of course they are. Mm. It doesn't have to be heavy metal football or whatever it is, you know, that Brian Wright is bringing in. So, yeah, I agree. But again, that's a little bit of inexperience maybe at this level. You know, they feel that it's all about outrunning the opposition and out-muscling them when, you know, maybe they need to back themselves a little bit more and keep it for 10 minutes, like you say. So, yeah, I give them a fighting chance of survival, Huddersfield. But, yeah, this is obviously a damaging second half for them psychologically.
Mm. Going to be a fascinating battle to stay in the Championship. We're going to head to League One in 4.754 seconds from now. And we're going to start at the Pirelli Stadium. Peterborough leaving it late to keep their hopes of automatic promotion on track. They scored twice in the closing stages to earn their fourth straight victory, 3-1 against beleaguered Burton on that quagmire of a pitch at the Pirelli. Sam, we've been thinking that they might gate crash to the top two for a while now. Posh, they're 4 points off it with a game in hand and, yeah, looking capable of doing so. Although, how much do you read into a victory at Burton these days?
It was going to be my Oscar actually for bad groundsman, but I thought it was a bit harsh. There was a few in the running this week, so we'll save it for the end of season awards. I just thought with Stevenage at home and Pompey at home this week for Peterborough, it was kind of high time we spoke about them again in potential automatic promotion candidates. So yeah, I mean it looks like a little bit of a run-of-the-mill victory, this, but I think Burton, until recently, have proved problematic opponents because of their style. Very robust, have a huge long throw, kind of pepper the box, really make you defend. So it's a difficult game up there, and Peterborough navigated it pretty successfully. And after four straight defeats, this is now four, obviously on the bounce ahead of these this colossal couple of games this week. Couple of things I picked out. There's seven players now with five goals or more for Peterborough, which won't surprise anyone. Highest scorers in a division, the highest XG, them and Pompey far and away the most creative sides in the division. And looking at the numbers with Barnsley and Derby, those two teams in particular have hugely overperformed their XG this season. So I just thought, you know, so many similarities between Peterborough and Portsmouth ahead of that game next weekend. That should be a wonderful game. And absolutely, Peterborough should still be in the conversation for automatic promotion, just 4 points off Derby with that game in hand. And I think Saturday proving very much a squad game this season. That kind of front three that Peterborough have been famed for over so many years, they've now got the opportunity to start with Jay Jones, who's a different type of forward player. Clark Harris came on here. Obviously been huge speculation about him over the last probably 12 months about his future, but coming on, still having an effect, assisting the second goal and then scoring the third. So got exceptional forward players. I look through the team, actually, I think it's a really good looking 11. So absolutely, if they can get a good points haul from these two games, I think 4 points probably would be acceptable to keep them still in the running and take them to the latter stage as well. They'll have a fighting chance. Burton, on the other hand, they've just run out of steam, haven't they, after an additional little boost after the manager went in. And I think with Fleetwood certainly improving, Cheltenham have plateaued a little bit. I think that's probably an understatement in the last few weeks, but they've got the potential to kick on again. So Burton needs some points, needs some results, because I don't think they're out of it yet.
No, they're 5 points above Cheltenham, who occupy the final relegation place as things stand. Now then, Clarky, we could have given an Oscar for the most, what the result of the weekend at the top of the show. Lincoln City would have been among the nominees for that after they thrashed Barnsley 5-1 at Oakwell. I mean, if we're being generous, I call some of the Barnsley defending suboptimal, but some decent strikes as well from Lincoln. Let's give them the credit.
Yeah, if I hadn't have been so mean to Alfie May, I would have given the Oscar for best sub appearance, maybe of all time, to Jack Moylan. I mean, two amazing goals. And then he sets up the last goal with a sort of Gascoigne-esque dribble into the box as well. I mean, he only came on at half time. He's only made one start for the club, lots of sub appearances since moving from Shelbourne in Ireland. And what an impact. He looks a real tremendous ball carrier. And yeah, it is a sort of, you know, WTF result, that is for sure. They are their bogey team. 1973 was the last time Lincoln lost against Barnsley. So not in our lifetimes as that happened. So yeah, maybe we should have seen it coming. But yeah, just a sensational second half display. Great energy to it. I mean, the goal, if you look at the goals, the way that they press and they hunt the ball down Lincoln was phenomenal. I think the central midfielders did a great job. Erhahon, one of those as well. Danny Mandrew in there. Yeah, they won the ball brilliantly and then they just went at the throat of Barnsley. And yeah, just a really positive front foot, aggressive style of play from Michael Skubala. And they're on a really, really good run. They had, I think, been unbeaten in 10. So I think it's unbeaten in 11 now. They've got the best defensive record in the division. So we know that they're solid. It's about, can they go and score goals? Well, this game, 5 at one of the best teams in the division, will give them real confidence, won't it, that they can go and score goals. Obviously, Taylor scored in this one. And then others chipped in. So yeah, look, Lincoln, dark horses, aren't they, for the playoffs? And Michael Skubala, who... Yeah, no one really has been talking about, you know, a bit underwhelmed maybe by the appointment. I think Imps fans are liking what they see from this guy. It's impressive.
Yeah, we questioned the appointment of Chris Cohen as his assistant, didn't we? You should never question Chris Cohen. That's something that I learned a long time ago. My only other piece of analysis from this game, Barnsley's shirt looks a bit too much like a Switzerland one from sort of Euro 96 era.
Yeah, it's too much white on it. A Barnsley shirt needs to be redder, doesn't it?
Yeah, not good.
Worst kit, though, incidentally, I know it's League Two. What about Bradford? I mean, that is rugby league, isn't it? It is rugby league, right? I mean,
well, you could see why they're trying to tap into that, maybe. Very popular up there, isn't it?
So I did a kit quiz on a rival podcast. I wouldn't say it's rival podcast, it's nothing to do with our podcast, the other day. And I was terrible. I don't know if... I'm just not taking it in anymore, but a lot of the kits don't look like they should be the kit for that team. Hence what you just said about Barnsley. I think Oxford was one that I messed up on them. I mean, it's just a few of them. I was like, get the colour scheme, but that just doesn't look like what they've worn over the years. There you go.
I've never been a collars on kits guy, personally. That Bradford one is a pretty egregious example of the very worst of that. Well, Clarky mentions League Two, or maybe it was Sam, I forget. That's where we're going, though. Goal in each half, giving Barrow's promotion hopes a shot in the arm while simultaneously plunging Colchester deeper into the mire. Sam, Barrow, with their higgledy-piggledy stadium, once offered my father-in-law a seat on the board. Hardly a traditional EFL powerhouse, but we ought to give them their flowers, haven't we? Because they're tucked nicely into the playoff places and rubbing shoulders with teams with far greater budgets than them.
Yeah, more than nicely. They've got a 5-point cushion over AFC Wimbledon, who are in eighth now, and a couple of games in hand on them and games in hand on the majority around them. So they're looking really good for a playoff place. Good response, I think, after a period where they've been chipping quite a number of goals. And their success, I think, has been built on strong foundations, really. I think they've only conceded the third least goals in the division. Recently conceded 5, if memory serves me right, at Salford. And then they've had back-to-back 2-0 comfortable home wins. 2 really good goals. Spence with the first, a really good long-range strike. 13 goal involvements for him. And a counter-attacking goal when Colchester were pushing through through Foley to get them the win. So they're looking really strong. I mean, it's crept up on me a little bit, the problems for Colchester. I think because they've not been getting beaten, essentially. They've had 6 draws in the 9 games under Danny Cowley, but just the one win. And I think in this game, and probably the recent games, the structure of the team, as you would anticipate with those guys at the helm, looks good, looks better. They're not being breached easily. They're having a lot of the ball, actually, having quite a lot of possession in this game, maybe not as a surprise against Barrow, who like to give up the ball, well, don't like to dominate it. Just lacking a cutter and the cutting edge. And Clarkey just mentioned Taylor, speaking about Lincoln. He was obviously the one, wasn't he, for Colchester early part of the season. And there's just a distinct lack of quality in the final third. I think McGeehan was the furthest forward midfield player at the weekend. He's got six. Tom Hopper, who obviously Danny Cowley had previously in his career, just with the one so far this season. So they're not going to win by many, but they're going to have to find a way to win some games narrowly to get them out of trouble. Doncaster and Walsall at home in the next two. I think there was quite a lot of animosity towards the side after the defeat of the weekend. So Danny Cowley's rallied the supporters to come out for the next couple of games. And yeah, they're going to need a united front to keep them in a division, which they've not been out of the league since 1992, I think I read this morning. So it'll be catastrophic, won't it, for them to drop out after a season that promised so much has tailed away so badly.
It's a long old away day as well, isn't it? If you're going from Colchester to Barrow. All right. It's been a Hollywood heavy show, so it's only right that we talk about Morecambe and Wrexham. Everyone's favourite movie star owned North Wales based team won 3-1 in Lancashire. Clarkey, before I watched the goals from this one, I read the match report and it said James McLean, Paul Mullin and Stephen Fletcher earned Wrexham all 3 points. And I thought, well, that's the thing, right? Because they're not League Two footballers.
Yeah. Good assessment, Matt. Well played. Yeah, you know your game, don't you? Their class did make the difference here, as did some decisions. It's the harshest of penalties, in my opinion. Obviously, a game changer. It's one apiece. And basically, the Wrexham player just blasts it at the guy's hand. The guy's hand is away from his body, but it's sort of, I don't know, there's no way they deliberately tried to block the ball. It was, for me, really harsh. And obviously, they benefited from a fairly soft second yellow card as well that saw the left-back Melbourne go off with a red card. So, a couple of things went their way. And that has been a complaint, hasn't it, about rival teams in League Two this year. They've looked at Wrexham matches and said, well, they're getting the rub of the green here with officials. Whether that's the case or not, I don't know. I stand to be corrected. But certainly of late, a few things have gone their way. But this was a tremendous performance. This was a performance that showed that Wrexham are a top side in League Two. It was very accomplished. It was professional, especially second half, where they just completely bossed it, owned it, good tempo to it. And the front guys did the biz, you know. I'm not just talking about the strikers. Obviously, Paul Mullin scored. Palmer, you know, he's a great target man, isn't he? Fletcher comes off the bench. But the midfield of Elliot Lee, Cannon and James McLean, all really, really strong. I think James McLean is enjoying his football at the moment. He was playing wing back, wasn't he? But Mendy is back now from injury. He's out a long time on the left. So they've pushed up McLean into a midfield position and he's having some really good performances. So yeah, this was a performance of a top three team. I would say they had 20 shots. Morecambe had six. Morecambe were a form team coming into the game. Maybe they were in better form, actually, than Wrexham. So, yeah, helped by the fact that they were playing against 10 men for a fair chunk. But still, they looked on it. And I think they will do it, Wrexham. I think they've got the big game players, as you've said, to get them over the line at the business end of the season. When I talked about Huddersfield earlier about having players that hadn't played at that level before, well, Wrexham have got players that have played at a significantly higher level in massive matches before. So I think their temperament in these pressure cooker matches will be good. And I also think the fact that they came through that pressure cooker promotion, the guys that were part of that will hold them in good stead as well when these massive 6-pointers come around in the next couple of months. I do think they'll get the job done.
Yeah, good to see people like James McLean, who's played at the very top level, still enjoying winding up Morecambe supporters. After scoring a goal. Mansfield.
What about Jamie Vardy? Did you see him?
Oh, he was going to be an Oscar contender, wasn't he? Yeah, most loathed player by opposition supporters in the history of football goes to. So League Two, Mansfield top 69, Stockport Wrexham 66, and MK Dons fourth on 64, although they have played a game more. Nearly done for today. A reminder before we go of the offer from our friends at QuinnBet, who've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers. Sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinnbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the show. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. We are on Twitter /X at EFL WhatThe, Instagram and TikTok at WhatTheEFL. If you can leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, that will help us out too. And as a little bonus, before we go, I thought we'd resurrect, potentially for 1 week only, Tweet of the Week. This one comes from your friend and my favourite, Terrell Thomas, who says, first back-to-back wins of the season. Felt good to hear the Valley again. Shouting emoji, applause emoji, hashtag March Madness, hashtag UTA. Some good hashtagging there, Sam, from the Charlton Man.
If it was wrestling, yeah, what is March Madness?
I don't know.
No, is it UTA up the addicts, is it?
That was my assumption, yeah.
Yeah, not a phrase that I've heard too often either. But no problem.
March Madness is that time of year when the National Collegiate Athletic Association men's and women's college basketball tournaments are held. Obviously,
I thought it was one of your mob. Probably something to do with wrestling. So I'm not having that. But I'm glad that he's a fan of the Soccer Stats or Who Scored website, and he's recognised the importance of the back to back win. Not something that I was too bothered about during my career, but nice little bit of stats there and some unorthodox hashtagging. So, room for improvement, but not too bad.
Alfie Hollins, one of the first comments, come back straight away. March Madness, laughy emoji, eyes emoji, fire emoji. Kind of sums it up, really, doesn't it? He's trying something different. You know, he's excited. What's that? What's the emoji that, of like a skull with...
I think it just means shouting.
Okay, that's a shout emoji.
Speaking head in silhouette as I hover my mouse over okay. The picture of it is what comes up.
I'll tell you what, it's going right for them though, isn't it? Old Nathan's got, he's re-energized that group. You know, it can go one or two ways because he's not your orthodox manager or character. Mm. So it's really good for, you know, good for Charlton that dressing room seem very on board with what he's after.
It does feel like we've been at like, you know, Stoke levels at Charlton, you know, like accumulating players and changing managers so frequently and nobody being able to get a tune. So for that reason alone, even though it's only a short period, you think he must have gone in there and impacted them straight away, which is like, huge credit to him.
If you want more Terrell Thomas,
I'm not scared of you, Nathan. I'm not scared of you.
He is at Terrell M. Thomas. I enjoyed the sort of backhanded compliment from at Doodoo Face Styles in the replies. He said, yes, Terrell, class again today. And every time you pulled on that shirt this season, kept it simple as a CB and clear your lines when you have to. Can't ask much more. Thanks for that, Doodoo Face.
He sort of hammered him in a sort of subtle way there, hasn't he? Just said,
Well,
basic.
That's basically what we do on this podcast, so we can't criticise it too much, I suppose. We thank you for your company today and to Mike Parkin for giving us the insight into Watford earlier on today. We'll be back with another show someday next week. Keep across our socials to find out when it will be. Until then, have a great week. Speak to you soon.